You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. Today is Thursday, October 13th, 2022. I'm Jeff O'Neill, here with Rebecca Shinsky, coming to you from BookRiot.com. After months of asking for the Colleen Hoover profile of our dreams, we've got another contender has entered the ring. We had the Laura Miller Salon, more of a critical assessment than a profile. We're not going to get into it quite yet, but Rebecca, did we get the profile we're looking for in your estimation?
Like 75%.
Right? Come on. It's Alexandra Alter in the New York Times, who does a wonderful job covering. It's good. I guess, well, we'll talk about it, but that's on the docket today. We have some listener feedback. I guess points of order. So next week, Rebecca and I are going to be at a company retreat. We're going to be traveling. Mm-hmm. Not going to be recording a new pod next week. Instead, what you're going to hear is probably our best favorite? How to even do these things? We're going to put into the main feed one of our bonus episodes from the Patreon. Is it our best, our favorite? Why are we? What are we choosing? And why are we choosing it?
I think it is. Well, it's one of our favorites. It's one of the most fun that we had. And I think a good representation of the kind of thing you get from the Patreon. When that episode goes live, there will also be a couple other bonus episodes on Patreon that will be free for a limited time. So you can go to the Patreon page at that time. All the info will be in next week's show notes, and listen to those three episodes that are also just a potpourri sampler of the kinds of stuff that we do over there. If you've been thinking about joining and still thinking about it, we've done it now for 6 months. Our original plan was try it for 6 months, see how it went. Did we want to commit to it? Was it successful enough to make it worth doing in the long run? And the answer to all of those things is yes. I think we're really having fun with it. It's giving us a space to do creative, you know, other kinds of things than just the news of the week. And it's been popular enough with readers or listeners for it to continue. So we're going to keep on keeping on, and we'd love for you to join us. So this is kind of our mark next week of like this. It's official now. You can maybe think of it as like a membership drive, but yeah, that episode that's a good representation of what we do will be in this feed, and then three other episodes will be available at our Patreon for you to check out for free. Also,
we've done enough Patreon episodes now that we can do Patreon episodes about Patreon episodes. We could do we could rank our top five favorite Patreon episodes that we've done.
We could. Yeah. Well, one of the first things that we did was talking about things we might do as Patreon episodes, sort of out, you know, brainstorming out loud together. And that was fun. And we have made a lot of those episodes now, and then made episodes that listeners gave us ideas for based on that conversation. So we can do all kinds of things with it.
Yeah, I haven't gone back to look at that list. I know there were a lot of comments on the actual post when we did that episode about people wanted. Not as many people listened to the Lonesome Dove 6-part deep dive as I would have thought, but you know, you give it a try. Sometimes, you know, people say they want what they don't want.
Right. We do know that too. Sometimes people clamor for years for a thing, and you make the thing, and then nobody comes to your party.
No one comes to your party. And
the story of the Lonesome Dove.
I know, it's ironic, isn't it? All right, let's do our first sponsor break, and we'll get into the feedback and everything else.
Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to portray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Unchipped, the most epic dystopian science fiction adventure series that you've probably never heard of. And bonus points, because it's Finnish. And when's the last time you read a Finnish dystopian science fiction novel? Right, okay. So in this one, humanity is destroying itself as the cities burn, which sounds kind of familiar. It is the time of the great affliction. In this terrible world, a new hope arises. The Happiness Program, which is the creation of a Finnish pharmaceutical genius, Dr. Laura Solomon. With happiness, pills, mind mapping, and microchips, Dr. Solomon intends to build a new world for the worthy few. Which sounds like a perfect plan, and nothing could go wrong, right? Right. So this is a raw but fun dystopian sci-fi adventure with an unusual premise, describing what happens when technology rules humanity. Either you're chipped living inside the AR society, or you're left outside to barely survive. Make sure to check out Unchipped by Taya DeVere. And thanks again to Unchipped, the most epic dystopian science fiction adventure series that you probably never heard of, for sponsoring this episode.
I had good feedback, listener feedback from someone else named Rebecca, former book riot contributor. Rebecca, thank you for writing in about Annie Arnaud. Basically saying they're great. Don't start with the years, which is what I had said, because I had also said that I hadn't read any. So please understand that I don't know anything here. But Rebecca said the one about Annie Arnaud getting an abortion about the pill. And I don't remember what the French name for it is. I'm sure there's places all over the place where you can find about Annie Arnaud. But she said that's the one that is bracing and illuminating and really speaks to the heart of her project. So thank you for an expert, or at very least a prosumer of the Annie Arnaud corpus about that, Rebecca. Thank you for writing in. We got a lot of feedback. Thank you also for people saying, emailing in the Colleen Hoover profile. I think everyone saw that they thought of us, which was funny.
It is funny. There's like one thing per year that we are like yearning for or talking about. And then when the thing happens, everybody emails us to tell us about it, which is always a really fun moment.
Also had some people doing Babel spot checks of inventory when they're out and about. Cause we talked about how Kathy wrote in, thank you, Kathy, that it was available. It seems available on Amazon. When they wrote that in, I went and looked, it was available, but it was a 14-day wait, which is unusual. I don't like to brag, but I'm a Prime member of Amazon. And even with my Prime membership, it was still
an exclusive club.
Yeah, I think you need an invite or something. It's available, but it seems like it might be a little bit back ordered or something like that. So I'm not sure. Availability seems to be spotty. Still didn't see it at Powell's the other day. So I continue to be fascinated by this story.
Interesting.
Let's see. I had one other piece here. I guess that was it. I guess that was all for the, thank you all. Oh, a lot of people writing in about the Barnes & Noble format. People have been, it sounds like most people like it. I think whatever affinity there is for the legacy Barnes & Noble format, the 90s format, is legacy affection rather than utility. But from people that are writing, then there, really appreciate everyone giving us feedback, because it's cool to see our half-cocked takes, my half-cocked takes, than anything else go in.
I don't think any of our Barnes & Nobles in Richmond have changed to that new format. I'll have to double check that. The ones I visit have not. But I was thinking, I'll probably be in Portland in winter or spring for work stuff. We could go on a field trip together, check out that Barnes & Noble. That'll be fun. Before, since we're out of listener feedback before we get into news of the week. Just want to refresh for those of y'all who heard us talk about it last week, or introduce it for folks who are new, that Book Riot has a new book that has just come out. It's called Reading the Stars. It is literary stuff for astrology nerds and astrology stuff for book nerds, little crossover there. So gives you an introduction to the basics of the different signs. What does sun, moon, and what's the other one? Rising sign mean? I am a relative beginner, don't know much about astrology. That's as far as I can take you. So it'll be like, are you like me, a Sagittarius who likes to travel and have adventures and needs a lot of novelty in your life? Like, here are some books you can read. And also, here are some areas that a Sagittarius might want to work on. And here are some books that would go for that. Gift recommendations for people in your life who like astrology and are into books based on their signs and other things. Publishers Weekly gave it a sweet little review where they called it an ideal gift for bookworms with a celestial bent. I think that is a great headline about it. So if you're looking for gifts, especially going into the holiday season, for somebody who likes books and astrology, I think Reading the Stars is a great pick. Right now through October 31st, you can enter to win Reading the Stars along with a bundle of gorgeous goods from Abhi Estate that include a celestial art print, a notebook, and a tote. And the link to that giveaway will be in the show notes. So you can enter to win, or you can pick up a copy of Reading the Stars wherever books are sold.
You want to do Hoover thing or Barnes & Noble's best books of the year first?
Let's do Hoover, since we talked about it at the top of the show. You know, give the people what we teased.
It's a good profile. I learned a lot. I think the one thing it didn't have is the one thing I need the most. And I'll read, again, this is Alexander Alter. It's, you know, that Seinfeld where the yada yada the best part, you know, the yada yada.
Yeah,
so here's a paragraph jump, and it's the fifth paragraph. When she self-published her first young adult novel, Slammed, in January of 2012, Hoover was making $9 an hour as a social worker, living in a single wide trailer with her husband, a long distance truck driver, and their three sons. She was elated when she made $30 in royalties. It was enough to pay the water bill. But 7 months later, Slammed hit the New York Times bestseller list. Wait a minute.
How?
How? Isn't that the story? What happened? I don't understand. Because that, I mean, she's making a lot more than that now, but self-published to $50,000 in royalties in New York Times bestseller list, that's the seed, man. That's the grain of sand around which this, not just pearl, but complete Tiffany's necklace pearl line has grown around. I don't get it, Rebecca. What happened? I'm confused.
It's the black box. Like, there are mentions in this profile and in other pieces about Colleen Hoover that TikTok is not the first time she's been a social media success. And so the assumption I'm making, in the absence of details here, is some feedback loop between her social media and readers posting about the book and finding her on social media, like some word of mouth, something that was via a mechanism that's not TikTok. And how did she do that? Because, if they get here in this piece about, like, right, this doesn't have the six-figure marketing campaign, the going on talk shows, the going on podcasts, the having speaking gigs, the winning awards, the getting glowing reviews that mainstream critics give, that are all usually part of a thing that a publisher is trying to do when they're putting marketing in place to try to make a book a bestseller. So, like, in the absence of all those things, and in the absence of money to bankroll like a lot of ads on Facebook or Instagram, like how?
Yeah, and so so it comes later and says making the bestseller list. So I'm reading this thing, so I'm going to give you a retroactive live reading. I'm like, okay, here we go. They're doing that New Yorker thing where they give you a little taste and then they go back, they flash back, and now let's see how Anakin Skywalker became Darth Vader, or something good. But here it's like, she shared chapters with family members and friends. Her boss at the Nutrition Center, Seffi Cohen, loved it so much that she took some casework for Hoover, allowing her to write during the day. In January of 2012, Hoover uploaded the book Slam to Amazon's self-publishing platform. She called me one day and said, "Mom, six people I don't know bought the book." The next day, it was 60 people. when the trickle of sales turned into a, again, is it just, you know, I don't get it, man. I'm really confused. I'm so fascinated to see.
I think it's also possible it could be a byproduct of Amazon self-publishing platform, Amazon features books that are self-published onto its platform with, you know, kind of prominent placements sometimes. And if she was making them, what was the price of these ebooks? If she was making them like 99 cents and people were devouring them and talking to each other, it could have been more of a product. Like, I think an algorithm has to be behind some mystery algorithm has to be behind anything like this, in the way that TikTok's algorithm is behind what's going on with her right now. And the clue there is that the 2020 big pickup in sales that we're still seeing, the not even the end tail of, we're still seeing the surge of it, started when early in the pandemic, she made five of her books free.
Which we had a listener email us about. So kudos to that listener. And interesting.
Right. Good job picking up on that. But I think that's step one of the current phase that we're in, is early 2020. She makes five of her ebooks free. Readers are, you know, everybody who lived through early 2020 remembers, like, everybody was kind of frantic for things to do at home. Free ebooks are a great smart choice to make if you're an author right then looking for promotion. So she did that. Readers were devouring them. And if you're making things free and you're getting a lot of downloads and then you have people leaving glowing reviews, you get algorithm juice on Amazon. So that could have been part of it. Then, of course, 2020 goes over to TikTok. But if we're projecting back to 2012, I'm guessing this is mostly Amazon magic, that you go from like 2 to 60 to 120 to 500 and on as the algorithm.
And whatever it is, and I'm going to be as neutral as I can about this, to be honest with you, whatever it is about Colleen Hoover's books that made it from that level to this unprecedented takeover, as Alter says in this piece of the New York Times bestseller list, that same ineluctable something that got from her from where she was in 2020 to now is maybe the same thing that got her from six copies to $50,000 in revenue.
Sure.
And it's word of mouth. It's, you've captured lightning in a bottle. You're expressing something that people didn't know they wanted or didn't ever get that they wanted. And you're 50 Shades. I mean, interestingly, she spent a morning with E.L. James talking about things kind of only they together could
really
talk about. And it's that magic, that special something that
there's something magic and unexplainable about it. And I think there's also some algorithm stuff going on here. And maybe algorithms are the unexplainable magic that boosts a lot of it. Because if she's just really, really great at social media, then she could have, you know, stopped writing books and just sold her social media magic marketing skills for $9 jillion to a bunch of other
authors.
Well,
and I've looked
at
her
social. She doesn't need to do it now because her books,
I've looked at her social, Rebecca. It's
me
good.
Too.
I'm not like... Yeah. We have here the Isaac Newton of social media for
right,
books and reading.
We've checked out the Hoover Soch. I think I think that's just a piece of it.
Yeah.
That's where readers like to go to connect with her. Authors have to be on social media, but we know she's not selling books because of her own social media presence. She's selling books because of other people talking about her on social media, and the way that that's just been exponentially growing and then amplified in that magical, ever-expanding echo chamber of TikTok right now. And I do think the Amazon algorithm can be a version of that. You know, one thing, I really enjoyed this piece.
Yes.
And one thing that Colleen Hoover owns up to that Alter talks about here is that she is really nervous about publicity. This is not a person who was ever trying to get famous. She never dreamed about being famous. That's a weird experience to have if you were trying to get famous. Fame is really bananas. And this is a person who was never going for it. She's very private. I think there's some reticence, understandably, on her part to, like, really talk about how this happened. Maybe hesitation to talk about how it happened because she doesn't want it to be replicated or to have her magic juice, like, stolen or copied. But even more than that, it just seems like you know, a certain amount of publicity is part of the deal for her now.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way, but my read here is that Colleen Hoover knows the New York Times comes calling and they want to do a profile on you.
Mm.
You kind of have to say yes, and you have to participate in pretty good faith and tell them some stories about yourself and do the thing so that Alexandra Alter, who spent her time, like, gets a good enough profile to write about you. But she's not giving, this is not an open book kind of profile. This is not like, you know, the most revealing, it's far from the most revealing of profiles that we get. And so for, I think, a variety of reasons, Hoover is just not talking about some of it. And that's maddening because we want to know how it happened. But it
and
also
maybe she doesn't
like,
know, like her yeah, performance yeah. or her presentation, whether it's performance or the truth, as she understands this, is kind of a shruggy emoji. It's the version of winning the lottery. And maybe there's that, but like, you know, she's had, like, when did she see, like, what day was it or what month was it, what week was it? Because she's her editor says, we're like, where are all these sales coming from? And then we saw, that's when we started to see the TikTok videos. Like, isn't it out there? Is what are the first 10 of these? Like, I don't what is the initiate, what are the initial conditions? Maybe they're out there, maybe they're not. But because even as credit, I want to give the listener who sent in the thing about her five of her ebooks.
Yes.
They said five made her ebooks free. Readers devoured the free novels. What does that mean? Was she tracking how many were being read and then started buying her entire backlist?
Yeah.
So it was the free not, but I don't even think they know. I think we don't know. I think that's what I came to. And there is no magic box that has the answers that it was this date and it was this video that led to these four videos and it was something else. It was like the William Goldman said, no one knows anything. And sometimes things become a phenomenon, and the word of mouth on steroids of the modern digital algorithm machine makes those inexplicable things seem even more giant, yeah. inexplicable enigmas of whatever. I think that's what it is.
I think so. And especially when you're talking about then like multiple algorithms getting juiced and then feeding
yes.
each other, that it happens on TikTok and then all of that starts swirling. And those people have to go buy their books somewhere. And we know most of them are buying their books on Amazon because that's where most people are buying most of their books.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that algorithm starts swirling and then people read the books and they've got to go talk about them maybe on TikTok and they're reifying that thing, or they take it to Instagram or they go to their book club and all of those circles talk about it. Somebody goes to buy the book, the Amazon algorithm gets juiced again. These things are all feeding each other. Then there's media stories about it because she's such a big deal. And if you haven't read her books yet, maybe you're going to now that there's media stories about it. Like, there's a quote somewhere in the piece from a person in publishing who's like, this defies everything we know
yes.
about how the market works.
Right.
And I kind of think that's all you need to know about this. Like, that it is yeah. not replicable. No one who's writing a book now or has published a book and hopes to sell it should think that they can capture this and reproduce it. This defies how the market works. And every now and then, something does that. I don't think that we're in any kind of position to say this marks a phase of the market working in a new way. This is one. It's a really big outlier, but it's just an outlier.
It's a really big outlier. And I don't look, you and I read the book. We did a Patreon episode about it. It's not for us. We were left, I think, a little mystified by the phenomenon based on the reading of that one book. The phenomenon is real. And the other part of the algorithm is like, there's a million books out there, and I'm only slightly joking. Like, there's, you know, like 50,000 new ISBNs per year for the last 20 years is a million books. I don't think it's random that it's Colleen Hoover. There is something here. I don't think it was random that it was 50 Shades, that it was The Da Vinci Code, that it's Twilight, that it's Harry Potter. They have something in them that was ready to be, there was some latent interest in whatever they're doing. And now it builds on itself. And that's the other part to me, because I'm in on The Da Vinci Code, as everyone knows. I was in on the Harry Potter phenomenon. I was in on The Martian. I was in on a lot of these things that became phenomenon. This is just one, and I have to say, with 50 Shades and Twilight, I was out on those, but I still felt like I understood those better.
Yeah,
I guess that's the other piece of this. I felt this is the least legible to me of all the outliers we've seen in our adult reading lives.
I agree, and I think there is an important distinction between phenomenon in the book world and just phenomenon.
Yeah.
And Da Vinci Code and Harry Potter, those did, and 50 Shades especially, were phenomena in the book world, and they were big enough to get noticed and talked yeah. about outside of the book world. This is that on major steroids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Hoover kind of gets at it a little bit in this piece, and it's the same sort of thing that we settled on in a part of our Patreon discussion of it, where she's like, I don't even get it. Like, she's like, there are people who are better writers than me. There are books that are better than this. I don't even get it how these are so super popular. And I think you said in the Patreon ep, like, that might be the feature, not the bug, mm-hmm. that it's not about like literary artifice in some way. She's like a quote unquote, you know, just normal person who sat down to write a story. And there's something about that voice and that lack of artifice around it, and just going into what she finds exciting that she wants to tell in a story that is like overpacked with drama and romance and sex and coincidence and, you know, all those kinds of things. And that is page turny. And if yeah. you're not, you don't have to be like a big literary reader to dive into her books, and you have to have something that's appealing to people beyond literary readers to mm-hmm. sell as many books as she has. And I just think that's what's going on here. I don't think she's the only person who has written books that could have done this, but you're right, there is something. It's not totally random. There is something in these that makes them accessible to this many people to get excited about. And there's all this other secret algorithm juice happening.
Yeah. There's not a lot. There's not many quotes from like cohorts, apparently, which is what the coho mm-hmm. stands, the Colleen Hoover stands call themselves, which as portmanteaus go, I like cohort. Good job.
Yeah, that's cute. Cohort.
But one said, where was the line? It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I should have highlighted. But like their reaction was, I want Colleen Hoover to punch me in the face. That would hurt less than these books. So the raw emotional, just mm-hmm. we may have said manipulation ? In our discussion of It Ends With Us. That straight from the oven, piping hot, hit you in the gut. Every time, that's how the books end thing maybe is part of it. And it's not something mm-hmm. that an acquiring editor at Knopf, frankly, is looking for, no. nor at other publishers. And interestingly, she has books out with multiple publishers, Atria, Montlake. Like, she's been, different things have been sold since she had so much of her backlist was self-published that she could kind of shop it around. Mm-hmm. I want all those details. Like, what are the contracts now? Like, how does this right. work? She has print rights in some and ebook rights to the other yeah. and audiobooks. And like, she has this conference room, and it sounds like she has this machine, and the way that it's presented is that she kind of walks in, gets her hair did and signs some books, but there's a whole other machine that she feels, she intimates that she feels responsible for keeping greased, which I think is really yeah. fascinating.
It is. It reminded me of some of the stuff that we've read by and about the George R. R. Martin things yeah, over the years, yeah. where he feels so much pressure. Like, I kind of just wanted to hold Colleen Hoover's hand for a minute and be like, are you okay? This is a lot.
You could stop. You know? I mean, I think that's, here's the right. line, right? Oh, go ahead and
yeah.
I'll read it.
You right. Yeah. Part. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That like, you could stop. I want to tell Colleen Hoover, you don't owe people anything. You know, mm-hmm. like you've put stuff out into the world that people have appreciated. That's great. You can stop anytime you want. You don't owe anybody anything. And it seems like she is feeling the pressure, as you were saying, like to keep the wheels turning, to keep the machine greased, to like sign as many books as anybody wants to bring to all of her mm-hmm. things, to appear and be gracious and do these profile interviews with the New York Times, even though she's a very private person. She's got to deal with weird stuff. Like, she had to have a gate and security system yes. put on her house because she saw videos on TikTok of randos in her driveway. Like, that's unsettling no matter who you are. And I imagine that she gets the same kinds of like, when is the next book? I can't possibly get enough of you, that George R. R. Martin gets. Yeah. And granted, like, she's pumping them out faster than he is, but if anything, that means lay off, give her a break. And it just seems like an incredible amount of pressure to be under. And if this is not the career you imagined having or that you strategized your way into, and it feels like, I just got to take every bit of this while I can. She says that near the end of the piece, like, I just know this could all go away tomorrow, so I'm trying to do everything I can with it right now, that is so, so much. Yeah. And just on a human level, I wanted to be like, it really is okay. It's all right if you don't want to do anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious now, like, the next, and I don't know how much time Alter had, I don't know what they could talk about, but, like, what does Colleen Hoover want now is a fascinating question, because she is in rarefied territory here. And this ends on a very somber note about her going to a convention. And at this convention, she heard complaints from volunteers, as a quote, and friends who felt slighted. Hoover cried on the drive home and called her mother. I mean,
it's so much
that's
pressure.
So much pressure. And I think I do take her feeling of imposter syndrome at face value, assuming this is, again, caveat, that this is a report and I don't know what else to say about it. But this is the kind of thing that people with imposter syndrome do or don't feel confident, because if I'm Colleen Hoover, if I'm advising Colleen Hoover, I'm saying no to some things.
Yeah.
I think, but does she want to be out there? Does she has, there's a line in her team of assistants. How much does she have to keep cranking out to fund the machine? Well, no, I'm serious. The thing that's grown up around her.
I
don't know.
And even the final line still in my head, I'm like, this is going to end tomorrow. She said, so I need to enjoy it. And is she enjoying it? Like,
yeah.
It has to be, it had to have been exciting when this started, but what it's become, I don't think I would enjoy what it sounds like she's experiencing. And I'm thinking about the financial advisor who lives in my house, who's going, she really could stop right now.
20 million copies in print. That does include ebooks. Right. And that's another thing we get here.
That's more than enough for basically anybody to put away and invest wisely and live the rest of your days in your happy little ranch house that you built with your first big round of earnings from your
books. Also, her secret writing office behind a bookcase shouts props to Colleen Hoover. Very cool.
Yeah, that's a good choice. But it just, I think this speaks to the dark side of these phenomena, that, like, it's really interesting and cool what's happened, somebody having a huge success like this. And obviously, like, we've been fascinated by it for months with what's going on here. But there's a person back there, and it's hard to be that person. And the way that she has sort of been turned into the commodity here, that people are mad if she doesn't do exactly what they wish she would do when she shows up to a convention, like, that's just not cool. I guess this is my PSA to everyone who loves Colleen Hoover on TikTok. This is my message to the stands. It's like, please be nice. This is a hard
Colleen
job.
Colleen Hoover is people too.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it reminds, I've never seen, to my recollection, I don't read every author profile that comes across because I have a life. It's a small one, but it's there. But I've never seen one that ends on sort of the Beatles alone in their hotel room because they can't go out kind of vibe. And some of it is that's the other blade of the social media stuff, where could people have picked Dan Brown out of a lineup in, you know, even the 6 months after the Da Vinci Code came out, unless you saw the CBS Sunday Morning? No, I don't think so. She's walking around Walmart in her pajamas, as it says here, which also life goals.
Great.
I'm sure she's getting recognized all the time now. I mean, she's that big, so. I think, right?
Yeah, I think it used to be that, like, I used to tell Bob, if I had to be famous, which I've never aspired to be, I would like to be author famous, where, like,
it's
a certain
really
number
stuff.
Of people, you know who I am. Maybe a couple times a year I get recognized in the airport by somebody who, like, loves my books. That would be the top for me. Being that known on social media, like, bumping into people just in the grocery store when you're trying to be a person, or you're in Walmart in your PJs. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, props to her for continuing to go to Walmart in her PJs. Like, instead of doing that, I guess I have to put on my full face because I might bump into a fan.
That's what your team of assistants are for, to go get Q-tips. I don't know. Maybe that's my dream. Like, if I need, maybe I'm not going out. What's the secret office behind the bookcase for if you still have to go do your own shopping?
Right. It's a lot to be on the receiving end of. And you can pick it up in this piece that she is in awe of what's happened to her and very grateful for it. This is a life that she never expected to be able to have. And it's really hard for people in her position to publicly say anything like, this is wonderful, I'm grateful for it, and it's really hard. And there are big trade-offs, and it's way more than I bargained for. And I think she's brave to show those kinds of things to Alter here. You know, she didn't give away all the secrets of what happened on which days with the TikTok juice, but she does show a complex part of this kind of experience that a lot of folks who get that famous don't really talk about or don't find a way to show that can still come off as genuine, you know, and not as a like, boo-hoo, I made $1 jillion and now my life is hard.
I do like origin stories. My favorite writer origin story is Murakami at a baseball game in Japan and sees a ball hit and has an idea for a novel and decides to be a novelist. Like, that's what he says. Mm-hmm. It's such a Murakami, like, that it could is. Be a scene from a Murakami novel, so I don't trust any of these things. Here's Hoover's. In 2011, when her youngest son was 7, he was cast in a play at a local theater. Hoover borrowed her mother's laptop to entertain herself during his rehearsals. Watching slam poetry videos on YouTube gave her an idea for a novel about a lonely teenage girl who discovers slam poetry. That's it. She was bored at her kid's play, and the algorithm, that's what I was wondering. Did the algorithm start all this? The algorithm created Colleen Hoover
YouTube.
By
yes,
showing
yes.
her slam. Why was she watching slam poetry videos?
Right, how'd what she, else did, is she interested in?
How, I don't understand. Tell me more, Colleen Hoover.
Yeah, I think I want the Colleen Hoover memoir in like 20 years when this is far enough in the rearview mirror to have processed it.
Yeah. So I think there's still meat on the bone, though less so.
Yeah.
For a profile.
I think probably we won't get the thing that I really want, which is that New Yorker treatment. Someone spends like days on end with her over the course of 6 months and she says all the things, you know.
Yeah, doesn't seem like, again, it's a New York Times. This isn't like a really long one. This isn't like a magazine kind of a piece. I read everything digital now, but in the old days, it would have been maybe the cover story on the entertainment section on a Thursday or something like that. It's not that long, so you didn't really get into it. But like, I guess this leads into a story that we didn't talk about last week. We're probably not going to get to it. There's from basically, where's the data in publishing? Was that the name of this story that we didn't get to?
Something
we had several
like
people
that, yeah.
email us like, did you guys write this? I'm like, thank
oh, yeah.
you. Thank
we
you.
Saw I think it.
We saw it. But for me, that's the piece that doesn't get talked about. And that there are flashpoints. And without all the stuff, this thing became a thing twice. She won the lottery twice. That's the thing I kind of keep thinking about here.
It seems like in 2050, when Chuck Klosterman is ancient and he's going to write a book about the 20 teens and the 2020s, he can look back with 30 years of perspective and pull the data about the flashpoints then. Yeah. Maybe someone will have summarized it at that point, but the exactly when and how this tipped off is still a big question mark.
She is currently, I'm going to end here, currently under contract to release 6 books with 3 publishers over the next 5 years. I'm tired just reading that
Me
sentence.
Me too.
3 with Grand Central, which is Hachette, 2 with Atria, which is Simon, and 1 with Montlake, which is Amazon. So spreading the wealth around. I wonder what the strategy behind that is.
Specialties in different genres, maybe. I would wonder about, like, maybe it's the marketing around those areas of expertise that those different imprints have in those genres, because she does make.
But does she need marketing?
She wants to.
I thought the whole point was she doesn't need marketing.
Well, but that's the thing, though. You start getting those big book deals, and you start getting marketing, whether you need it or not.
Whether you need it or not,
because now we're in the.
We didn't talk about this, but she's not self-publishing. That's not what she's doing for print.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've always wondered if some big author, the Stephen King, John Grisham, Patterson, you know, Bankable, take my audience with me. I'm a bigger name than my book, right? Where my name is bigger in Golden Boss in the grocery store than the title of the book. Say, I'm going to take my cachet, clout, whatever you want to call it, and make all the money myself. If anyone was ever going to do that, you would think it would be this, but I guess the structure of print is just such, and getting it into Barnes & Noble and having your own Colleen Hoover thing and getting into Walmart and Costco, just you don't want to do it. You might as well hire them in the form of profit share to do that.
Yeah, it requires so much infrastructure. I was thinking about Brandon Sanderson's Kickstarter and how he was talking in those videos about, we are producing these like beautiful hardcover books for some of the levels of the Kickstarter, and we're going to do distribution and shipping. Mm. And he has a whole company and a whole big team of people that it takes to do those things. And that's just for those books to fulfill a Kickstarter thing. Not even I'm self-publishing this and then I want to arrange distribution widely through a bunch of retailers. So I think it's probably the same reason that anybody moves from self-publishing to a publisher, is to get that infrastructure and support and be able to focus on the thing that you know how to do, which is the writing and the, you know, in Hoover's case, doing the Hoover Soch.
Here's the line I was thinking of before. I'm sorry. We should go read the piece, sign up for the Times, pay money to journalism, I guess is what I'm saying. But the pressure to meet deadlines and to keep her business running has taken a toll. And Hoover canceled her book tour for It Starts With Us because of stress-related health issues. Mm. So this is the book that's coming out this month. It's the sequel to her best-selling It Ends With Us, her best well-known. That's not what you want, Rebecca. That's very bad.
That's not getting to enjoy it.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not getting to enjoy it. And the high cost has come along with this. And I hope this is a hamster wheel that she feels like she is empowered and able to get off, if that's what she wants, or to change it. I keep thinking comedians getting cars with coffee. I'm not sure where we are on Alec Baldwin right now, but there's a scene where Alec Baldwin is expressing his admiration for Seinfeld's really enormous wealth, but the liberty it gives him. And he says he does this little bit where he says, if I were you, I would just pick up the phone and say no to everything anyone asked me. Just no, no. I think about that from time to time. Freedom is the ability to say no. And it seems like Colleen Hoover, I mean, she did cancel the book tour, so she just said nay to it. Yeah, so I guess that's maybe a good sign.
I know. I feel like, should we send her a copy of 4,000 Weeks and a bumper sticker that says, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no?
I mean, at this point, I don't think I have anything that Colleen Hoover needs to know from me. She's at a mountaintop at the summit of which few, if any, have ever...
Yeah, I hope she's all right.
Ascended. All right, let's do another sponsor break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Children of Virtue and Vengeance by Tomi Adeyemi. If you like pretty things, like I like pretty things, I got something for you. The stunning sequel to the worldwide phenomenon Children of Blood and Bone is now available in a deluxe paperback edition with gorgeous spray-painted and stenciled edges and an exclusive excerpt of the earth-shaking Children of Anguish and Anarchy. Now, this is a series for you if you like action, you like world building, you like mythology retellings, lore retellings, specifically of a West African variety, has all that and more. It was also an instant number one New York Times bestseller, a Good Morning America book club pick, and now both Children of Bone and Children of Virtue and Vengeance are available in these deluxe editions. They're pretty, they're gorgeous. The finale to the series is coming June 25th this year, so you can get the pretty editions of the first two books and be ready for the last book. You see what I'm saying? So make sure to check it out, and thanks again to Children of Virtue and Vengeance by Tomi Adeyemi for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by The Last Blood Carver by Vanessa Lee. So I am super excited about this one. It has what sounds like a really interesting, unique magic system. It is a medical magic system, and the world is based in a Vietnam-inspired fantasy world. And it follows Nika, who is what you call a blood carver. And blood carvers are these beings who can alter human biology with a single touch. Now, to people like Thumas, she is a monster who can be traded for gold. So one day she gets caught and she's forced to heal the last witness to a high-profile murder. And all signs in her investigation point to an alluring physician's aide, Cochin. But then she discovers Cochin is not who he says he is, and she's suddenly faced with a greater evil lurking in the city. Now, her only chance to survive lies in a choice. She can become the monster the city fears or risk the future of her kind. Amazing. I'm so excited. Make sure to check out the new book, and thanks again to The Last Blood Carver by Vanessa Lee for sponsoring this episode.
I'm not sure if I want to go full vindication or whatever from my year of front list, But my showing is a little better on the Barnes & Noble Best Books of the Year.
I was wondering about that. That was going to be my introduction to this conversation as well.
I mean, I haven't read them all, but I've heard of many of them.
Yeah, that's a good starting point. So this is not the existential crisis of the National Book Awards long list.
So how do you want to start with just the 10, or where do you want to go?
Yeah,
let's give the
top 10 Barnes, according to Barnes. First of all, putting this list out on October 10th, too soon. And not all of the books have even been published. But that rant aside, it's a good list.
Yeah.
Jeanette McCurdy, I'm Glad My Mom Died. The Rabbit Hutch by Tess Gunty. Babel, R.F. Kuang. Louise Penny's A World of Curiosities. Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. Our Missing Hearts by Celeste Ng. Michelle Obama's The Light We Carry. Prisoners of the Castle by Ben McIntyre. Skandar and the Unicorn Thief by A.F. Stedman. And The Song of the Cell by Siddhartha Mukherjee. So I think I have heard of 9 out of the 10.
I'm 10 for... What's the one you hadn't heard of? Prisoners of the Castle?
Yep.
That's Ben McIntyre, and I listened to The Spy and the Traitor, which was great. So I knew of this. This doesn't sound like an especial, even Nazi fortress prison. I know dad book par excellence. I'm not into Nazi fortress prisons. I'm sure it's great. He's a really interesting, taught, popular nonfiction writer. I'd heard of it. Not for me. I'll check in with the next Ben McIntyre.
How many have you read?
Let's see. I didn't do the count. 1, 2, I guess just 3 right now. Lessons in Chemistry, Our Missing Hearts, and I don't want to step on it for a future frontlist foyer, but I'm about to finish Babel by R.F. Kuang. And I will read, of course, Song of the Cell. It just hasn't come out yet. And I think the Tess Gunty, we had a couple people write in to Jeff's existential crisis saying this one got some love on the other side of the pond. I think we're having a Tiger's Wife, Tia Obrit thing happening with this book right now.
I think so too. Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
I've only read 2 of them so far, Lessons in Chemistry and Our Missing Hearts. I will read Song of the Cell. Mm-hmm. And I bought The Rabbit Hutch last week because I was like, okay,
I'm going to read this. I'm going to read this one.
I'm seeing it in enough places. And I downloaded the audio of the Jeanette McCurdy. So I will finish the year at 5 out of the 10, I think.
On the best fiction front, again, we have some overlap. Rabbit Hutch, Lessons in Chemistry, Our Missing Hearts, all, I guess they're calling fiction and not mystery. They mean literary fiction, I guess, is what they're saying. On that list, I will read The Marriage Portrait. You and I did read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. I will read The Passenger. I think I will read all of these, actually. Now is not the time to panic by Kevin Wilson. I've been very much looking forward to that. Ian McEwan with Lessons, I heard, was a return to form. I know you're out on McEwan. That is fine for everyone if you don't want to do that. So that's the one I'm like, okay. Sure. Yeah. I hear what I kind of see. I pick some. I won some. Is this what I want? Is this what I wanted the National Book Award long list to be? I don't know the answer to that. I guess if this was the National Book Award long list, I'm not melting down, I guess. So I'm not sure what I'm worried about here.
Yeah, I think I wanted the National Book Award long list to be some of these and some more recognizable, like higher literary fiction. That's the interesting thing about this list. Like, I haven't read The Rabbit Hutch yet, so I don't know. Maggie O'Farrell is the big, really historical fiction. We're going to talk about Celeste Ng in like 15 minutes on the bonus episode, so I don't want to step all over that. But I do think it's a move into a more literary like kind of craft for her.
Yeah. Lessons in Chemistry, I was looking at the Publishers Weekly best-selling list. It's still in the middle. It's still hanging around, 14, 15. We'll get to what are the books of the year discussion, maybe as a Patreon, maybe as regulars. I don't know. I think Lessons in Chemistry has to be up there. It's an unusual book. People like it. It's different. You and I have both read it. Did we talk about it on the show? I can't remember.
No, we talked about it together. Actually, I think when we do books of the year, we should try to do a revamp of the after episode conversation we had offline. Like, what is this book?
Yes. And my memory is that you're glad you read it, right? That's step zero conversation. I'm glad I read it too. We do have a eyebrow raised, not unlike the cover design, our reaction wasn't unlike the woman's face. It's like, this is interesting, but I am maybe worried, nervous, unsure about what's going on here. So I guess no real surprises, which makes me feel good, but then also I'm disappointed, so I can't be pleased, and life is hard, and culture is tough,
yeah,
and here I am.
It's interesting, like Sea of Tranquility didn't make it. Some of the stuff from earlier.
My trilogy, man.
Early in the year.
To Paradise, Sea of Tranquility, and Candy House, which I would have bought stock on
right,
January
Candy
1st.
House. Yeah.
Zip, zero, not appearing on a lot of these lists.
Right. And I'm surprised in retrospect, too, about Candy House not making National Book Award list, and maybe the Emily St. John Mandel not making that list. It is what it is. We've talked about
that
one.
It is what it is. I think I want a blend of this in the National Book Award long list.
I think so too.
I don't want every single one of these. I know what every single one of these books are in the top 10 fiction, which I guess makes me feel good about the marketing and publicity machines of major publishers, because this ain't exactly Europa editions and $2 radio titles here.
Yeah.
I think I want a little both.
Yeah. Some space where there is a debut short story collection and something I've never heard of from a small publisher. So there is some discovery is really nice. I think that blend is also what I'm looking for.
Best nonfiction of the year. Is there anywhere else you want to go? I guess there's history, cookbook, biography, and memoir.
Yeah. Let's see. Did I scroll right on past nonfiction?
Siri's wanting to join in. Sorry for, I don't know what triggered that.
Oh, that's funny.
Can we take a quick detour, a rest stop on the highway to Front List Foyer for a second?
Yeah.
On the best biographies and memoirs of the year is Solito by Javier Zamora. I listened to that this week. Oh my God, Rebecca.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh.
Okay. If it's not one of my five for the year, I will be shocked.
Okay, tell me more. Tell me everything.
So, memoir by a poet. Check.
Okay. Yep.
Check. It is the book when American Dirt came out and we're like, where are all the real stories, right? Where are the people who did this or know about it? Javier Zamora immigrated to the U.S. as a 9-year-old from El Salvador in the late 90s. And I'm going to give enough to tell you to get people interested in it, but not give away too much, I hope. But his parents came ahead of him, got ready, saved up the money. And then they paid for a coyote to bring him and a group of others. Well, he was amongst a group of others who were also paying to come from El Salvador to the U.S. And he's 9. And Zamora is unbelievable. The choices he makes about how to narrate it, what to say, what not to say, what details to include, what not to do. He narrates it himself and it's unbelievably great. I'm thrilled. Wonderful. It's not easy. I don't think all the trigger warnings. And I guess the spoiler is he's alive at 28 to write the book. So he makes it, I guess. Or he survives. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Stunning, unbelievable work. I can't think of too many listening experiences like it. The kind of story we need a million of. I highly recommend it on audio. And he's very we should talk about it once you're done. I recommend it to our friend Clint today, friend and coworker. People who want to know more about this and also appreciate, I don't know, it's a literary work, an experiential work, an historical document. It's all the things. Completely blown away by Solito by Javier Zamora. So there you go. I'm glad to see that, thrilled to see that.
on best memoirs. I haven't done much memoir reading this year. I've heard good things about the Alan Rickman memoir. I've heard good things about Viola Davis's book, Finding Me.
Celebrity I've heavy. Also heard, Are these always yeah, so celebrity heavy for memoir?
Honestly, I don't remember. That's a good question. Are you going to read the John le Carré Letters, A Private Spy?
I would like to. Do you ever curl up with a volume of letters? That's not really my. I don't know why. I don't like to do that.
No, I don't. But sometimes we do different things. So I thought maybe you would.
Yeah. No. I don't know what the market for these kind. It theoretically is the kind of thing I would like. And maybe I don't seek them out, but maybe if I bought one, would I pick it up and, I don't know, run through it? I guess it depends how good they are. You know, Letters to a Young Poet.
That's true. How spicy are they?
Top 1% of, I mean, we're talking canonical stuff, so clearly not averse to it, but I guess it's the quality of the letters. Who is Le Carre writing about what, I guess, is interesting? And I don't know. Not something I necessarily, because if it's Morrison's letters, I think we snap this up like hotcakes.
Yeah.
But do I care about Le Carre's private correspondence? I guess my answer is no, Rebecca. My answer is no, okay. I really don't.
That's fair.
At this
Looking
point.
At the sub-list of nonfiction that's just best science and nature books, we do have a couple faves here.
Yeah.
Ed Yong, An Immense World, and then Song of the Cell, Siddhartha Mukherjee, comes out later this year, and I'm sure we're going to love that. What If 2 by Randall Munroe. I know he's popular in your household with the kids, and especially being able to look at all those, the fun diagrams there. And then I've had How Far the Light Reaches by Sabrina
Me
Imbler,
too.
Which
I've
is a life in 10 sea creatures. which is a great marriage of my love of obscure kinds of memoirs like that and your A History of X and X Things.
There's a book coming out that's, I don't remember the before the colon head, but the after the colon subtitle is How One Weird Rodent Shaped America, and it's about beavers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, is it Beaverland? Because that is one of these top 10 science and
where? I didn't get all the way to it.
Oh, I had to click into
it. It has to be. How many beaver books can be coming out this year? Do we have a deep
Beaverland.
Impact to Armageddon situation?
It's Beaverland by Leela Philip. How one weird rodent made America.
I saw some good notices for it. I mean,
well, it's in Barnes and Noble's top 10.
I mean, I'll be damned if I don't read it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here.
Oh, Jeff. Let's move
on. Let's move on. Also, best history books. I did read River of the Gods. I think I talked about that by Candace Millard, which is about search for the Nile, the source of the Nile, which I really thought was cool. Cool.
Yeah,
it's good. I mean, it feels like, you know, Barnes and Noble picking Barnes and Noble-y books.
It's good stuff. I still object to the timing, but okay.
Are you a don't have pumpkin spice latte in August person? Where would you like to police? Would you like to make the internet happy with some opinions about when people should consume things?
No.
Yeah. Okay. You just made
I'm
going to
decline.
How do I feel about The Passenger being on this?
How do you feel about that? I mean,
I
you
couldn't
were
be
read
happier.
It anyway.
I'm thrilled.
Yeah, it makes that's not the one that I'm nervous about. I'm nervous
no,
about the
I
other
know.
One
I know.
With the female.
No, it did
character.
Not make the list.
Right, notably not among.
Is it
the
coming
top
out this year,
10?
Stella Maris or whatever it's called? Do you know?
I don't.
Is it 2022?
I think they are coming out at the same time or
That'd
right
be a weird flex for that.
It would be weird. Maybe it's early 2023.
Yeah, makes a little more sense.
But I'm going to let you check that one out, perhaps, and let me know.
I didn't tell you this, but a little birdie spoke on my behalf to get a VIP copy of the new Abraham Verghese sent to me, and I have it on my shelf.
Good.
Have you done your homework yet? Your 50 pages?
Not yet. I haven't done it yet because we're reading Celeste Ng. We're reading a book for the work retreat. I'm trying to do all my homework, but I am going to read the.
Wait, was that a professor? I've got so much work in my other classes that you just did on me right there. Is that what I just heard?
I got so much other work for this class.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right.
But yes, I look forward to doing that, and then we can talk about it.
Yeah. It's a chunkster. I mean, it's one thing to know, but you hold that baby in your hand like, okay.
It's a big book.
Not a word in the marketing copy or anything about the defection, switcheroo, eviction. How are they going to cover that? Alexandra Alter, if you listen.
You know,
what's
and
the, deal?
The piece of that I've been also thinking about is, you know, the avenue through which we got these early galleys is a publicist, an outside publicist that doesn't work for the publisher, who I know to have discerning taste. And I was looking back through this person's like backlist of books that I know they've represented and then other stuff. And I was like, they've never represented a stinker, which by itself makes me feel more confident going yeah, into this.
It's not the kind of bartender that would serve you punch out of the turd in the punch bowl.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, yeah. I do still need to know what happened with Verghese's deal at Penguin Random House and how he ended up moving with this book to Grove Atlantic.
That's juicy. That's juicy.
It is.
Like, that's
There's
you need to be hanging
there.
Around and... What are the Cafe Loop? Wasn't that the old place that the publishing people used to hang around pre-COVID? You need to have martinis at Cafe Loop and have someone who was knew someone start loosening. Kind of like the party where Rowling got outed as Robert Galbraith. They were drinking, that's what you need to serve someone to get the real story.
Right, and like notably when we have mentioned this a couple times on the show, our inbox has not been flooded by people being like, here's the juice. Whatever it is closely held, I think.
Like three people probably know, right? Like the editor, someone in finance that
His
could
agent.
Make, maybe Madeline McIntosh, right? I mean, does it climb all the way up to Ratter to pull the
plug? I don't.
How
maybe
far does that kind of stuff
go? It was a seven-figure deal.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we know from the transcripts of the antitrust case that stuff that's a seven-figure deal goes to Madeline McIntosh.
You gotta get Double M to sign off on that. There's a whole thing.
I think you're right. It's like Verghese, the agent, the editor, and somebody at the publisher who signed off on that deal and then signed off on undoing that
Well, then
deal.
Someone at Grove who took the book probably was like, mm-hmm. So can you guys tell me why this sweater got returned to Kohl's? Yeah. Why is this thing such a good deal?
Yeah, I have many questions.
Anyway,
will we ever get them? Who knows? No.
Podcast at bookriot.com. You never know. Good way to end the show. You can find links to this and all back episodes of the Book Riot podcast at bookriot.com/listen. You can send us an email, podcast@bookriot.com. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/bookriotpodcast. The next episode you hear from us and this feed will be, I guess we didn't even say, it'll be a surprise. You can hear what the episode's going to be, but we did have a good time. We will be doing more versions of this format, by the way, in the future. We've already talked about, we're actually trying to hold our horses because we could have ripped off like five in a row. We're like, this was fun. Let's do this again.
We do have one more of that format scheduled in before the end of
the year. Oh, do we have one more for the year? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you check it out there. And then once that is live, you can then go to that same link, patreon.com/bookriotpodcast, to see the, listen to a few of the other episodes we've made available. We've been doing about one a week. I think we probably averaged 3 bonus episodes a month over the course of the experiment, of this trial period. Is that right?
I think that's right. We started in April. We've each taken some vacation time, you know, and that's a thing that we value. So we're going to continue to do it. And when we have extra stuff in the can, there might be shows even when we're on vacation. But like with this next week, we're going to be on retreat with our coworkers. We will not be recording an episode, but we have stuff that we can still use. Yeah, I think maybe 3.5 episodes is an average.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm not sure what's sustainable. We have enough shared interest to do, maybe after we've done it for a year, we go to 2. Maybe we say, we could do 4.
We'll
I don't know. But so far, it's felt pretty sustainable. Mm-hmm. We get to talk about books for another 30 or 45 minutes. I mean, I've done the reading. Rebecca's begging out of a lot of it, it sounds like.
I did my homework for today, man.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Rebecca, thank you as always.